we know from earlier research that we have essentially two types of deer for Unit 4, those that are migratory and those that are non-migratory. And when you say that to most people, they think of a lower 48 herd where deer move long distances laterally across the landscape. Here in Unit 4, they move vertically. So it's elevation that controls it. So you have one segment of the population of deer that spend most of their lives from 900 feet elevation and up, where you have the second segment that are spend most of their lives 900 feet below. And what happens is, though, that you get a bad snow year like we've had, it does compress the population, and it will force those deer up high down. And we want to look at that, and especially the female component, to see how they're moving through there. Now with the new GPS collars, you can get so much more information from one collar than you could from a whole array of VHF collars before. So we went out there the last week in August to take a look at doing this and get started. We were delayed a little bit. We were hoping to do it earlier in the summer, but we couldn't get the collars manufactured and put together. So we went out there, and Karen McCoy is the project leader. She's based out of Juneau. And we had Dr. Dave Persons from Ketchikan, who has done a lot of the Unit 2 work down there on deer, very familiar with the situation there and handling, putting on collars and that type of thing. And so he spent a week out with us, and we traveled about 300 miles by road. We would go up to the closed roads, walk them out, call. And in that whole week, we saw 20 deer. And we were able to dart and collar a yearling doe. She was in excellent shape, weighed about 70-some pounds. Got a collar on her, and then came back to town and talked to the Forest Service biologists and ranger to kind of look at, say, you know, please keep collecting additional information from people that you hear that are out there hunting. But we had already heard from a number of people that, yeah, we're seeing some deer, but we're a little worried.
Have you gone up and done this road system before, you know, say 10 years ago, and counted hundreds of deer?
Not 10 years ago, but I'm very familiar with that because I essentially lived out in that area for 2 years in 93, 94, where it was part of an eco-team effort by the Forest Service and Fish and Game to come up with a landscape scale analysis. So there isn't a drainage I have not been in over there, and so I'm very familiar with that, which gave me a great advantage. I knew where I could go, where I historically had seen deer. And like I mentioned before, not seeing deer is one thing. The clear cuts have grown up a lot. And so a deer can disappear in 30 feet very easily off the road system. But when you go out and you see great leader growth on all of your primary plants, and then you start looking at forbs that deer essentially seek out like gold thread, and you start to see lots of it, and you don't see any browsing evidence, and you don't see it in the bottom of the drainages, and you don't see it in the top of the drainage, that's not good. And that's what happened. And that's why it was good to have Dave Persons with us, because he had never been to Chichikov Island. And he looked at, and he could tell by looking at the plants, you could see the historical evidence with high population, where they were taking stem diameters down to about the size of your little finger. And that's bad. And most people know that if you prune a plant, you actually get a better response, but if you prune it back too far, you end up killing the plant. And that's where the situation gets its. He said, wow, you had a lot of deer out here not too long ago, and now you don't have very many at all.
Do you think this northern Chichikov area is unique because of its the length of time the snow sticks around, plus the fact that it's near a community, plus the fact that it's sort of a center of logging, plus the fact that it's heavily roaded? Are all these factors conspiring to depress the deer population, and is it just this area, or can you look at a map of Southeast Alaska and say, I think the same thing is probably happening here and probably happening here? Or,
well, the situation, and I would agree with you, it's all of those factors. In fact, not people come in all the time. You get all the hunters and that come in, and many of them have been in the woods 40 years, and it's not that their information is not good and valuable, because it is. It's the interpretation of it. And that's my job, is to look at a much longer scale. For instance, the difference, the biggest difference for that area from all of Unit 4 is the fact that you can hunt interior deer from the road. You can access them easily. Here you have to go by boat and you have to hike. And so your efficiency as a hunter goes way down. and if the ability of deer to evade you is much better. But when you're able to jump in a vehicle and quickly access different areas, that changes the composure. The other thing that happened in Hunu is the fact that they cut a large section of the landscape over a fairly short period of time and added those roads. And that changes the complexion. Ecologically, even though that harvest was, say, done over 15, 20 years, ecologically it happened at the same time as far as the plants are concerned, because you're looking at a longer-term scale. So you're in a situation right now, they're doing a lot of tree thinning on second growth to open up those stands a little bit. And it's going to continue to change as that all that habitat, all that browse that was available as summer food starts to decrease. And the weakness in a heavy snow year is that you don't have the snow interception from the canopy. And that's what we saw repeatedly over there, is that we had a lot of harvests which isolated patches of timber up above at, say, 900 feet to 1,200 feet and up. And it limited the ability of deer, when they were forced by deep snow, to come down with that in those areas and funnel out. So if you want to think of it as a funnel, that's a good way to do it, because it pulled deer from a wide area up above trying to get down. They just flat ran out of room. North Chichikov Island, on below the road system in a lot of those drainages, they have a lot of natural fragmentation of rolling type muskeg, stuff that you see. A prime example is like Range Creek around Baby Bear, where you have that kind of terrace muskeg. Crawfish Inlet has got a lot of that too. Kruzoff has got a lot of that. That's not real good stuff to be stuck out into when you've got deep snow for deer. And then you get into all kind of factors that aggravate the snow. It's not just the snow depth alone. If you get snow depth and then get rain that freezes on top of it, it makes it difficult. And if that snow happens in March, when they're already in probably the weakest condition they are, then bad things happen. The other thing that happens, Robert, is that that people forget that we're on the northern end of the natural range for black-tailed deer. Our deer on Unit 4 are smaller than the deer. Part of it is population density. We don't have wolves, thank goodness, because that would have changed the situation for more of the unit had we had wolves in the bad winters like that. But we know, snow records show that too, that the north end of Chichikov Island is definitely colder than around the Sitka area. And that's what we're seeing right now from the surveys that we've done. The deer are responding pretty well and rebounding pretty good in the Sitka Sound area through Peril Strait and through the heart of the unit. South end of Baranof is actually doing a little bit better. The Chatham side is a little bit weaker, but it's overall not real good habitat either. Admiralty's had some issues on the east side, but the hunters there are reporting seeing deer more so than what they are, so that those numbers are coming back. I haven't had a whole lot of reports from West Chichikov. The islands, though, are a very similar situation, where you have a lot of natural fragmentation. They didn't do very well. I understand as you get back in off of Kaz Peninsula and those areas where you've got some of the timber there, that they're seeing deer. And we're having a lot of people come in and saying, well, the numbers are coming back up. And the deer that hunters are harvesting this year look good. That was one saving grace of the deer that we did see over in Hunu, was that the deer that are alive are in really good shape. And that's encouraging. We just need to give them a chance to get their numbers back up.
Phil, I know this kind of limited closure, I don't think, has been used much before, has it?
No, in fact, it's pretty interesting. I found a fax in the files from 1979-80 that was sent to Butch Young, who was here in the very early 90s, late 80s and 90s, when they had a closure proposed after 1992, the winter of 92. And that kind of shows you almost a 15-year span of time that we just hadn't gone through it, and they'd sent it from the office as a template, for Butch to take a look at to do it.
Right.
And I was really fortunate when things started looking bad here. I had Loyal Johnson, I had Butch Young that was available, Jim Farrow, Jack Whitman. So I had a whole legacy of predecessors that had kind of gone through this, like, what do you do, what should we do, how long do you want to wait, deer, you know, when the deer populations are up, they manage themselves. They're very, very resilient. They have a high reproductive capability. You knock them down, and they come back up. Lungworm, which a lot of Unifor deer, really doesn't play a factor here because we have milder winters. There's some theories that, you know, that you may have enough lungworm that it decreases the size of the fawns from the does that have it, and typically it does affect deer when they're 2 years of age and less. But we don't see a whole lot of that. But you get a tough winter when they're already weak, and essentially they're on a maintenance diet in the winter. They're living off their fat reserves, and you get into March, and then you have a heavy storm and then a late green-up, that's tough on them.
What's your confidence in this closure as a management tool? Have you got your fingers crossed on it, or are you fairly sure that if hunters are just willing to lay off does in this area of Unit 4, we'll see a rebound because the vegetation has already come back, and if the climate favors the population, will start to see more deer there? Or is there a bit of a roll of the dice here that you're unsure about?
Sure. I think, to be honest, there's always a roll of the dice. Mother Nature controls a lot of this stuff, and you kind of sit by the wayside and try to interpret it, try to guess right. There's a lot of data to pull in there, but you get to the point where you kind of have to second guess and make a gut guess on where you want to go with it. And that's why, you know, just myself with 5,800 square miles to cover, I rely a lot on hunters to tell me what they're seeing in other places. And I did that in Hoonah. Like I said, I went to the first public meeting and said, okay, tell me where you've been and what you've seen. I'll tell you where I've been and what I've seen. And then I've got three more days to go out there and go look at what you've reported. So I could kind of get a bigger scope picture. And that worked out really well. Part of it is, I think we're doing the right thing over in Northeast Chich. I think we've got the community involved, and we've got them looking at a lot of these things we've been talking about. And it was nice to hear at the end of that meeting a couple of weeks ago was that one promise we'd like to have you make is that you'll be here September 1st next year to hold another public meeting prior to the doe opening. Because if it's like this, we would rather forego hunting does to get that number back up. We'd rather have a couple years of this. And if it's not coming back like it is through this next winter, we don't want to see it open. So, you know, I feel good about that because then that tells me that they're looking at a big picture. And sure, it is tough on people that rely on deer. That's the other factor I'm looking at. It's a staple for a lot of people, and especially in small communities like that that are truly more subsistence. It's tough on them, and you just can't run to the local grocery store. And you're in a situation right now with the gas prices. Like, people can't afford to drive out to the end of the road and not see something. I mean, we noticed that the traffic is down a lot. Boat fuel, it's the same deal. So, you know, you look at all of that on the human side of it, and then you're looking at the resource itself. Professionally, I would not want to see the deer population come back to the levels of 2005. In 2004, and it was aggravated where we had very mild winters. If you look at our deer harvests, the numbers were actually down, and that's because the deer were at 1,000 to 1,200 feet and wintered there. And I think a couple of years that they hurt that transition range. And you can go to the plants. I mean, that's the evidence. You go to that and you look at what they clobbered. You can only do that for so long, and then you start killing those plants, and so your capability goes down. So, you know, managing wildlife populations is always trying to keep it before they hit the peak, kind of, because you don't want to get into this roller coaster boom and bust. And there's paper after paper after paper written on that, on management schemes that have done that in the lower 48. And that's the challenge, is kind of guess right. Use all the information you can. Guess right. Have a little bit of luck on your side as far as the weather, and cross your fingers.
Is there fallback hunting for the residents of Hoonah somewhere that by boat or?
There is, but not easily.
Right.
And that's the other issue. In fact, a lot of the Hoonah hunters told us that they'd actually gone down to Unit 2 this year. It's the first time they'd ever done that because they felt that it was better off to spend their time that way. And we did have some people that say, well, you know, we should close the doe season forever. And that's where I stepped in and said, no, that's a wrong long-term strategy. That's, you know, you're reacting to a short-term event right here, and you couldn't do that because we rely on hunters to play the role of predators that you have as wolves in a lot of places. They need to take some of those does. You can't have that population just shoot up without. So, you know, it gets to be a balancing act, and we put a lot of time and effort in, and we'll continue to put a lot of time and effort in. Deer's a very important wildlife species for people here.